Hi, I'm Ed Horwich, and this is the Prodig Podcast. Prodig is the email forum for professionals discussing issues about the digital image. For news and information on how to join the email list, which is free, go to the website prodig.org. Well, the way that we store, disseminate, and make use of images in recent years has changed very radically. No longer are your personal images in a photo album in your drawer. No longer do you have to go to a photo library and get a set of transparencies with a contract on paper describing how you use them. Everything is now available globally on a worldwide network. And personal images tend to exist alongside commercial ones. Indeed, in this multimedia age, is the still image still viable? Does it have a future? And if so, how do we make sure that our rights on these images are preserved? And when we do have an image that we want to distribute, how can we make sure that people can find them? Well, Selena Dunlop looks at these issues. She's picture editor of The Economist magazine, and prior to that was head of pictures at Radio Times, both globally respected magazines, and well-renowned for the way in which they actually use their images. So, let's take a listen. I think you'll be intrigued when Selena describes some simple points that could be implemented that would help clear the muddy waters of both image identification and parenthood to the benefit of everybody.
So, let's look at four areas of the current revolution in photography and the media. I want to look at paper versus the web and the future of stills photography. Metadata's crucial role, restrictions on choice for picture buyers, and developments in licensing. Trends in newspapers, in trends in newsrooms 2007 was a study conducted jointly between the World Editors Forum and Reuters. 435 senior news executives participated in this global survey. 85% of them are very or somewhat optimistic about the future of their newspaper. 40% believe online will be the most common platform for news in 10 years, which obviously means that 60% don't. This is clearly important because the media we work in dictate the formats that we're going to be using. Video capture will undoubtedly become the most popular form of image capture, and most of the major camera manufacturers currently associated with still photography will be out of business by 2016. This is a quote from an article written by Dirk Kolstad in the BJP in February of this year. As you can see, he's a man of some stature. So are still images on their way out? When I was told about Second Life by Reuters a few weeks ago, I conducted a deeply unscientific experiment. Over the next few weeks, I checked the number of videos posted. The number has not changed. However, screenshots have more than tripled from 6,000 when I looked originally. It seems that people who choose to spend their spare time in cyberspace continue to enjoy still images. Jonathan Klein, the CEO of Getty Images, not a man known for misjudging the picture market, has said print will never go away. New platforms create new opportunities. It may be in the interest of picture libraries currently dealing exclusively in stills to consider broadening their range to offer clients video as well, as some like OSF and Magnum are already doing, either by producing the material in-house or by building new alliances with those already in the video business. Why should film and video be seen as mutually exclusive? Both media have their strengths and meet different requirements. In the days immediately following 9/11, sales of newsprint soared. Why? Well, in part, it was because people needed to hit the pause button. They needed to take stock and reflect on what was happening. Print provides a change of pace as well as a change of format. Digital Journalist is run by Dirk Kolstad. It has this excellent feature on the site. Many of these events were also captured as footage, but it is the photos that are iconic. At top right, Don McCullen wrote about taking this picture in his eloquent autobiography, Unreasonable Behaviour. He said, "I know my pictures had a message. What it was precisely I couldn't have said, except perhaps that I wanted to break the hearts and spirits of secure people." Donald Rumsfeld, US Secretary of Defense, reacted to the photographs of Abu Ghraib on May 4th, 2004, by saying, "Oh, I'm not one for instant history." 3 days later, on May 7th, he said, "I failed to recognize how important it was." It's this very role of photographs as historical documents that needs to be recognized by photographers. So let's take a look at metadata. In this list of keywords, a few are relevant to the picture they describe, but many, including camel, mule, conflict, peacemaker, Saddam, Israel, Iraq, and Kuwait, have no connection at all. The introduction of the royalty-free formula for marketing digital imagery was a great innovation in many ways. On the downside, though, it introduced a new generation of photographers to the concept of broad-spectrum keywording as a sales tool, and encouraged them to dispense with captions in the mistaken belief that a long list of often barely connected keywords somehow preserves the context of the picture. The caption is not a peripheral option. It is often what makes the picture saleable. It records what, where, and when for the short and long term. In addition, the caption also saves picture buyers from having to do what we have just done, read through long lists of often contradictory keywords, trying to work out just what the photo is of. And incidentally, this applies just as much to licensed footage. Let's now touch on two issues that limit the choice of picture buyers. Firstly, there are great benefits from picture buyers and researchers being able to search out photos wherever the best picture for the job is to be found. Being free to seek out and encourage and reward talent across the rich diversity of global picture sources that we currently enjoy. This is not always possible. In parts of the media, bulk deal contract licensing locks researchers into using only prescribed sources in order to cut the unit costs of pictures to a minimum. Good photography needs to earn money in order to thrive. And after all, if you need a piece of cheese, it should be the best cheese available, or camel. The second issue affecting choice has arisen since the picture business went public, breaking out of the small group of professionals it used to reside with. There are many ways for non-professionals to make their pictures available to the media now. That's a good thing in many ways. News events have often been captured to great effect and with astonishing immediacy by non-professionals. The Oklahoma City bombing and Concord bursting into flame are fine examples. For the majority of picture buyers who do care about such niceties, they need to be able to publish in confidence, confident that no laws have been broken in the taking of a picture, and that none will be broken in the publishing of it. Picture desks have to vouch for the legitimacy of the material they supply. They are the ones held accountable if copyright or privacy or any other laws are broken by publication. From the buyer's point of view, there is a lot to be said for working through a professional intermediary such as Scoop.com. The public are swift to condemn any perceived error or deception. Many Time readers felt tricked by this artwork, even though it is fully attributed. On this picture, I received a complaint that we had deliberately montaged Cameron's head onto the body of an 8-year-old boy. I replied, "This is just what he looks like." Finally, copyright and licensing has changed a lot recently. New innovations. So forgive me if we just go over the basics very quickly. I'm sure you all know it better than I do. Photographic copyright is automatic. Copyright belongs to the artist and there is no need to assert this. 1988 Copyright Act extended the duration of copyright to include commissioned photographs. And copyright lasts for the life of the artist plus 70 years. Moral rights are rights that remain with the author of a photograph irrespective of what happens to the copyright. Paternity right is the right to attribution, but it must be asserted. It lasts for life plus 70 years. The objection to false attribution or passing off lasts for life plus 20 years. And the integrity right, the right to object to derogatory treatment, there is no need to assert this right and it lasts for life plus 70 years. And then there's the right of privacy, which is safeguarding the privacy where photographs have been commissioned for private or domestic purposes. So where does Massachusetts-based Creative Commons fit in? They say the idea underlying Creative Commons is that some people may not want to exercise all of the intellectual property rights the law affords them. We believe there is an unmet demand for an easy yet reliable way to tell the world some rights reserved or even no rights reserved. So how does this work with photos? From their website, will Creative Commons give me permission to use a work? By applying a Creative Commons license to a work, the creator or licensor has decided to clearly signal to members of the public, such as you, that you may use the work without having to ask permission. A person applying a CC license to their work chooses from various options to indicate permitted uses. Let's take a brief and necessarily prosaic look at just three areas of their extensive license: derivative works, third-party rights, and attribution. Attribution is defined as you must attribute the author and or licensor in a manner they require. And no derivatives can be applied. You may only make verbatim copies of the work. You may not adapt or change it. Unless the no derivatives option is selected, derivative use is permitted. I don't like the way a person has used my work in a derivative work. What can I do? All Creative Commons licenses, with the exception of Canada, leave moral rights unaffected. This means that an original author may be able to take action against the derivative work that infringes the moral right that protects against derogatory treatment. Even where derivative use is permitted under this license, the photographer retains the integrity right to object to derivative work. Anyone wanting to use the picture has no idea where that particular individual's boundaries lie between acceptable and unacceptable derivative use without contacting them. Third-party rights. The question is, so I don't have to pay to use Creative Commons license works if I comply with the license terms. It's worth reading the whole paragraph. Right at the bottom it says, so you may still have to pay a collecting society for such uses of Creative Commons licensed works. The legal requirement to clear third-party rights is mentioned elsewhere in their guidelines, but usually while discussing another topic, and here the emphasis is on payment. Perhaps third-party rights needs its own FAQ, so everything relevant is grouped in one place, clearly spelling out that permission must be obtained and contracts may need to be signed prior to use. These licenses are designed primarily for use by people outside our profession. They are probably unaware of the possibility of third-party rights in photographs, and the phrase will mean nothing to them. We have all seen photos that include well-known trademarks, yet cheerfully state that they are property released. Unlikely. In making use of such material, though, these people are potential users are crossing over into professional territory which carries the full weight of the law. Copyright is complicated, and most infractions come through error or ignorance. Educating people enables them to avoid problems. Does using a Creative Commons license work give me all the rights I need? So there is no assurance whatsoever that the licensor has all the necessary rights to permit reuse of the licensed work. The licensor is not guaranteeing anything about the work, including that she owns the copyright to it, or that she has cleared any uses of third-party content. Before using a Creative Commons licensed work, you should satisfy yourself that the person has all the necessary rights to make the work available under a Creative Commons license. You should know that if you are wrong, you could be liable for copyright infringement based on your use of the work. People applying this license to their work are asked to make sure that they have all the appropriate rights. However, although promoted as a license that enables use without having to ask permission, this section firmly recommends getting in touch with the licensor prior to use, because they may not have the right to grant permission in the first place. What happens if someone misuses my Creative Commons license work? A Creative Commons license terminates automatically if someone, for example, fails to attribute your work in the manner specified. This is a bit I find sad. You can consider contacting the person and asking them to rectify the situation, and or you can consider consulting a lawyer to act on your behalf for information about how you may be able to locate a suitably qualified lawyer. Please refer to, and then there's a hot link. What a shame that a license born out of a corporation should recommend lawyers so quickly and easily. What a shame that talking is not pushed a bit harder. Errors are not usually malicious, and on the web, corrections can be made so easily. So, attribution in the manner specified by the author. Sounds straightforward, and with a text document it is. You just add a couple more words. Flickr is one of the major image sharing sites, and there you are able to search on the various CC categories of license. But there seems to be something missing. The law requires paternity to be stated. The CC license requires that all work should be attributed in the manner specified by the author. An image sharing site just tells who posted the pictures, because that's all friends and family need. The photographer is not provided with a prominent location on their Flickr page where they must state the manner in which they wish to be attributed and can assert paternity. A small redesign could accommodate that, and Flickr could play a really valuable role in educating very large numbers of people in the basics of copyright. Flickr advises anyone wishing to use an image to contact the photographer. No exception is made for Creative Commons license holders. As things stand, that seems to be good advice. It is extremely difficult to make using work in copyright easy yet reliable without personal contact. That's the traditional way it's always been done. DACS, the UK's lead, one of the UK's collecting agencies, mainly dealing in artistic works, has a good website, and they have comprehensive advice freely available on UK copyright law. Interesting times lie ahead, that much is certain. I feel very sure that photographers will be around, sometimes helping to inform opinion and so change the world by breaking down barriers or breaking hearts, but always bearing witness as only they can. Thank you.
For more news and information, and to sign up for the email list, which is free, go to our website, prodig.org.